Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to Ask the Vet. Ask the Vet is here with you every third Thursday of the month. And we are a call-in show, so please make sure you call in. The number is 963-2976. You are listening to KDNK, and it is 4:30. Today, we have two people with us today, actually. We have Dr. Melissa Gislason, who is here to talk to us, and also a special guest. We have Emily Yannarelli, who is here also to assist with Dr. Gislason. And we're going to talk about a new idea. It's, usually we talk about medical things with our pets when we're here, but today we're going to talk about emotional and mental issues with our pets. And it's an idea that's fairly new and out there, and it's called fear-free. So I want to start with asking Dr. Gislason to tell us a little bit more about what fear-free means.
So fear-free kind of is a thought process, or kind of a different way of thinking about veterinary care. The number one reason why clients have a hard time bringing their pets or their little critters to veterinary clinics, it tends to be because it's a hard time, or it's a difficult thing, or it's a negative experience for their animals. So the whole thought process behind fear-free is to, you know, really look at that and see what we can do to prevent or alleviate the fear, the stress, and the anxiety that comes along with going to veterinary clinics. So that's what we're thinking about. That's what we're trying to kind of focus a little bit more on, and not necessarily just getting them in, doing a quick exam, asking a few questions, but really focusing on kind of the behavioral and the mental stress that comes along with going to the vet clinic.
Well, and either of you can answer this question, but what are the long-term and short-term goals that you're trying to accomplish here? Because you know, some people might say, well, you just, you know, hold on to that dog and give him the shot so I can get out of here. So what are the long-term and the long-term or short-term goals?
So, I mean, definitely short-term wise, you know, we want that satisfaction for the animal. We want to, you know, try to make things as good as possible. You know, I don't like going to the doctor. I don't think there's many people out there that like going to the doctor or things like that. But we can't really explain that to our patients. We can't explain what's going to happen to them. So it's a scary thing. So short-term goals is really, you know, trying to minimize that. The long-term goal is, you know, that we are able to kind of counter-condition our patients to, you know, having negative experiences, having their blood drawn, having vaccines given. You know, toenail trims are a huge one, to make those a pleasant experience for them, so that as they get older, as more things happen to them, when they're, you know, we're worried about illnesses or injuries, that it's not a scary place for them when their bodies are already stressed.
Oh, okay, that's good. I like that long term. Do you have anything to add to that, Emily?
I think that was a wonderful answer. Yeah, that sums it up nicely.
Well, and don't forget, everyone, this is a call-in show, so please, let's stump the vet, and you can stump the guest as well. The number here is 963-2976. You're listening to KDNK, and it is 434. Are you talking about dogs, or are you talking about cats, or are you talking about both?
All species. Yeah, everybody, all species, even humans, experience stress, just like Dr. Gislason just mentioned, when they're going to a new place, going to a place that something unusual is going to happen to them. So dogs and cats experience stress in different ways. So you've got to do some different things and practice different techniques with those different species.
That's what I was going to ask you next, if the techniques were the same for the two species. So tell me, give me some examples of things you might do with a cat, or things you might, and things you might do with a dog to help them.
So, I mean, it can be as simple as playing calming music on the way to the car, instead of, you know, turning the music up really loud, like a lot of people do in the car when they're driving. It's more playing subdued music or calming music is something that we don't think about, but that can be kind of alarming to pets, especially if they're not used to being in the car. It can start that early. With kitties in particular, you know, one of the biggest struggles is getting them into a carrier safely without them being too scared and without, you know, owners getting hurt in the process. So it can be taking the carrier out a week before your scheduled appointment, or even better, having it out all the time and having it be a safe place for the cat to go. It starts there. And then there's definitely techniques and different ways of restraining that we use for dogs and cats. A lot of it is food motivated. So it helps if they can come to the clinic hungry, and really just so that we can make it a pleasant experience. Most dogs and most cats are food motivated animals. So if, you know, we can use a little bribery to make it better, then that's always easier.
Use the word restraining. Tell me more about that.
So, I mean, a lot of times, when we have to do vaccines or blood draws, the animals have to be, you know, pretty still in order for us to do that in a safe way. And, you know, 5 years ago, it was okay. And not that it's not necessarily okay now, but in a more fear-free manner, it's using a more gentle technique. So instead of, you know, restraining the dog's head in more of a headlock situation, it's, you know, something more gentle. Whether that's, you know, just gently putting an arm around or covering their eyes, things like that can kind of help, so it's not as scary for them.
Okay, thank you. You also talked a little bit about, when I asked you for examples, you started with examples of what the owner can do. It sounds like mentioning leaving the cat carrier out at home ahead of time. That's probably so that we're going to go to the vet, so you pull the cat carrier out and immediately the cat goes and disappears, right? Because they know what that means. So, tell me more about those. Why is it, I guess I'll ask it this way, because there's two questions here. One is, as an owner, when and how should I start, okay, preparing my animal? And I'll ask about cats first, and then we'll talk about dogs. To go to the vet?
That's a wonderful question.
Thank you.
Yeah. I always recommend that people start right away. Call me the crazy cat lady, but I do desensitize my kitty cats to travel in the car, starting very slowly just by sitting in the car with the kitty cat in a contained, safe way. The car's off. We give a couple of treats. And then I go back inside and I practice that slowly amping up the stimulation to turning on the car, moving a few feet, going around the block, all while adding positive things to that, like food, pets, moving slow, so that you get to a point where the kitty cat thinks that the car is something very normal. And that really, really helps the yowling situation that most people experience when they're transporting their kitties from their house to the veterinary office. That can be very, very stressful. So starting right away with little things. These days, we're even suggesting that people play with their puppies and kittens' toes, play with their ears, touch their tails, get them used to things that the doctor's going to be doing to them. We want to trim these pets' nails. We want to look in their ears. So if these interactions and these ways that they're going to be touched are normal for them already, our jobs are easier and the visit is much less stressful for them.
I suppose you could even take your new pet to the vet, call them up, say, hey, can I come by and have you guys maybe at 5 o'clock or something and have you guys spend some time with my animal? Yeah. So, you know, it sounds to me like if a cat, let's say, we're talking about cats now, is used to being a house cat and is always in the house. Putting them in a car can be like totally traumatic.
It is.
So what you're talking about is these little things that you can do to desensitize them and to make them feel more comfortable. Well, this is just normal. We get in the car every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. And it's not always practical for every home.
Right.
People are busy. So doing the things like Dr. Gislason mentioned, there are some aromatherapies that are appropriate for cats. Lavender is one that is a good calming one, a nice dilute lavender scent. Using classical music, we're just music that's got a low tempo and a low beat and is quiet. as a non-stimulating background noise. There are special pheromones that you can use. One product is called Feel Away. We love that. It's just a calming, happy, safe kitty cat pheromone. You can spray on the carrier, in your car, on the towel that's in the carrier, just to kind of make it a more pleasant experience, and just move slowly. Be prepared. Don't rush and jam your kitty cat into the box.
I think we have a call.
Ooh, wonderful.
Yeah, so hold on just 1 minute while I answer this. Caller, are you there? Hello, are you there?
Hi, yes, I am. Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Welcome. What's your question?
Hey. Well, my wife and I picked up a cat from Buena Vista shelter a few years back. And just a great cat. He is, I would imagine, probably 4 years old now. And I can't get him to stop nipping. Doesn't bite hard. It's always just a little bit of a nip, but when you're not ready for it, and it's on your calf or your leg or your arm when you're not ready for it, it's obviously not pleasant. So I do my best to discourage it. You know, I do a little tap on the nose, or I just push him away. And what can I do?
Good question. Dr. Gisselson.
Definitely good question. There's lots of kind of more, I guess, enrichment opportunities that I would probably recommend. I mean, it really depends on, you know, what is his, you know, style of play? You know, is he getting everything he needs that in that regard? It sounds like if it's pretty unpredictable, it's more of a, you know, type of playful hunting type of reaction.
It is that. It definitely is that. It's not. I'll walk by him and he'll be on his little perch when I come in from the garage, and he'll smack me a couple of times with his paw.
Yep.
And reach over and nip my arm.
Yeah.
As I walk by.
Yeah.
And it's all play.
He wants you to play with him.
Bite. You know, it's not a hard bite, but if you have guests, it's like you're always preempting it. Now, be careful. He might, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So he doesn't bite that hard. I don't mean to say he bites hard.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the things that I would try to do is kind of create an environment where it's safe for him to behave that way, and not necessarily towards people. That's not what I mean. But an outlet for that energy that he has. You know, they make automatic toys that they can play with, you know, chasing laser pointers, or, you know, they make little electronic toys that have strings on them that they can chase. A really, really good option for these guys is actually food toys. It's something that we think of a lot with dogs, but they actually make little toys that you can actually put his meals in, and kind of give him that opportunity to kind of use his energy and to use his brain, kind of stimulate him and enrich him that way. All of those things can be really helpful, in discouraging that behavior, but giving him a safe outlet for that energy that he has.
Well, what would you suggest when he does give me a nip?
I would redirect his attention, is what I would recommend. So a lot of times, you know, our gut instinct is to do the negative swat or things like that. But often that can not encourage the behavior. Sometimes it can with kitties. But it kind of creates that you're playing back. So if you kind of do a swat back, that's telling him that you did that to me, so I'm going to do it back. So discouraging him, giving him, you know, that toy, that treat, or not treat, so you're not rewarding it, but giving him that other outlet is what I would do at that point.
So maybe are you saying that when the cat swats at him or nips at him, you have a toy ready to distract
him with?
To
redirect that attention, yeah. Yep, so he gets used to, you know, that being what he utilizes that energy towards.
Right. I'll give it a go.
Having the Feel Away is also a really nice product to have if you have these kitties that do have this extra energy. They tend to be a little bit less territorial, and it does kind of just take the edge off a little bit. And like Emily was saying, it does come in a spray. It also comes as a diffuser, like a pheromone diffuser that you plug into an outlet that can just kind of help take the edge off a little bit while you guys are going through a transition phase.
So it relaxes them, is that right?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Sir, thank you
very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for your call. You're listening to KDNK, and this is Ask the Vet. So please do call in again. We just had one caller. It was a great question, 963-2976. Doesn't have to be on subject. You can ask anything you want that has to do with animals, specifically dogs and cats for today. I wouldn't want anybody to call in about a goat. Not today. Anyway, maybe another day. So how can you tell? Okay, besides the obvious, I'm sure there's obvious, and talk about the obvious too, but how can you tell when your pet is anxious or fearful or is under stress, and that could be very dangerous for them or unhealthy for them? How can you tell? Give us some examples, the obvious and the subtle.
So there are a lot of things to look at, and some of them are the same with dogs and cats, and some of them are very specific to a dog or a cat. So for example, if you're looking at an anxious dog, they will probably have several things going on. Dilated pupils is one of the first things that we notice. Dogs are very expressive in their faces, so oftentimes they'll have their ears back against their head as sort of a nervous, submissive sort of posture. Some sort of more subtle signs that can be confused sometimes are excitement. Really sweet Labradors often are panting and pacing and exciting, and they're going and they're licking the veterinarian, and they're going and they're licking their owner, but they can't seem to settle down. So high anxiety can manifest itself in excitement. Panting, pacing, like I mentioned. And then one that gets oftentimes very confused is yawning. So that's kind of a different one. Dogs will often pick up one paw. We see that in small dogs when they're feeling insecure. They'll just raise one of their paws up, usually a front one. And that's sort of a submissive gesture for them. Any other that I missed with dogs?
I mean, there's so many. It can be as simple as avoidance. With certain exam rooms, if they can get under something, if they can, you know, kind of remove themselves from the situation, they don't have to be kind of outwardly showing it. It's more that that kind of response to trying to hide. It's going back and thinking about your flight or fight mechanisms. You know, even freezing is one where they're not moving at all can definitely be a sign of fear or anxiety.
Yeah, those are great ones. Kitty cats, the number one that we see is hiding. But oftentimes nervous kitties will give us a little hiss. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to attack us or do something really scary. But it's a warning for us that they're feeling insecure about themselves.
We do have another call.
Wonderful.
So, yeah. So, hold on one second, please. Caller, are you there?
I am, and I'm calling to report a lost dog.
Oh, well, okay. I'll take the information. I'm sure that the radio station is listening, too, and they'll take it down as well, but please give it to me.
Okay. We found a dog, a yellow lab, on the bottom of Prince Creek Road. He's older, and no caller.
Okay, and thank you, Beth.
Beth, okay, if you can, do you have the dog in your possession?
We do.
Okay. If you can take him to a vet clinic, they can check him for a microchip?
We just did.
Oh, okay. No luck?
No luck.
Okay.
Thank you, Beth. Wow, that was interesting. That was great. So, what were we talking about?
Fear free.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, oh, you were telling me about some signs. And I was going to ask you next, you know so much about this subject. How did you get so smart? What is it? You know, how did you learn about fear-free, and who came up with this idea?
So fear-free is a kind of program or a generalized initiative in the veterinary community that's definitely gaining ground right now. And to be a certified professional with the fear-free program, it's a online course that is about 9 hours, a 9-hour course. It's broken down into different topics. And after each module per se. You take little quizzes, and then once you get through the entire module set, you're considered a certified professional in the fear-free kind of mentality.
Very good. And what made you the two of you as professionals want to do this?
I think, the main reason why veterinary professionals get into the field is for our love and our passion for animals. And for me, it's really sad when, I guess, our job is viewed as something that's really scary. When, the main reason we do what we do is to help animals. And to have that be a negative experience is definitely something that I would love to see turned around. I get excited when my patients are excited to see me. I think it's sad when we can't explain what's going on. And that can be really debilitating to our patients. So if we can help to make things a better experience for them, that's really important.
How are your clients responding to this change in the way we behave in the clinic?
It's definitely a change to have this kind of be at the forefront of a lot of appointments. I think a lot of clients are really appreciative of the extra care and the extra effort that we're taking to make sure that their pet is comfortable, to make sure that their pet isn't scared. Is every patient going to show up and, be super receptive to all of the new techniques? Probably not, but there's definitely other things that we talk about at that point.
Oh, we have another call. We have very little time, so I'm going to take this real quick. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
We only have a couple of minutes, so please.
Yeah, I understand. I have a quick question. I have a cat that I got from care a year or so ago. She's about 4 years old. She has been an outside cat before. I live on a busy street, and I've had cats most of my time there, and I don't let them go outside. She's at the intersection,
That's very smart of you.
Get run over and all that. So what I have is an inside cat that wants to be outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so she'll sit in the window and meow and meow, and I can just tell that she would love to go outside. I've debated using a leash and, taking her for walks, but not giving her free rein.
Yeah, I think you're on the right path there. Certainly, call me the crazy cat lady, but I've desensitized my kitty to a harness and a leash, and it's a slow process, once again, very slow to get them used to that, but it's a safe way to give them that enrichment. Some people feel like if you let a kitty cat outside and they get that taste of being outside, that then you have even more of that problem with your kitty crying at the window or crying at the door to go outside, or that bolting when you're opening the door and not expecting them to run out. So,
right, and I guess that's the main question. Is it better for their psychological happiness to just never give them the opportunity anymore to go outside? Or is it better to, take them outside, once or twice a week and then have them pine the rest of the time?
Yeah, every cat's going to be a little bit different with that. I think if you can work on desensitizing them to a leash and a harness and being outside in a safe, controlled way, I think that could be a good outlet. There's other, safe cat enclosures that you can get to kind of take her out in short increments as well. For me, both of my cats are completely indoor cats. And they kind of do okay. They love to sit in the window when it's open. And that's about as far as they get. But I think there's definitely, for me, the safety aspect is more important. And I think there's things that we can do to enrich cats outside of just letting them outside.
Sir, I'm so sorry, but we're going to have to have to stop the show. But if you want to call back at the main number, you want me to give that to you? And then someone here could talk to you on the phone if you'd like to. Or are you good? Or are you good?
I think I'm good, really. I just kind of wanted to get somebody else's take on it.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you for calling.
You have a great show. Appreciate it.
Oh,
thank
well,
you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that's it for our show today, guys. Thank you, Dr. Gisselson. Thank you for coming in. Thank you, Emily.
Thanks for having us.
See you guys
thank
next
you.
Month.